Giving time for Hitler?
Why not? Think of the prestige!
No!
Think of the respect!
No, no, no!
Think of the Tony!
Tony, 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 Tony!
What's the matter?
Is he all right?
He's having a stroke.
What?
I'm genius!
Good evening and welcome to Broadway Radio for July 19th, 2009. My name is James Marino, and on This Week on Broadway, we have a special edition where we're going to collect a bunch of disenfranchised voters or former voters for Tony Awards. Joining us this evening is Peter Felicia. Peter can be read three times a week at theatermania.com and is also a writer for the New York Star Ledger. Hi, Peter.
Good day.
And also with us, we have Matthew Murray. Matthew is the chief theater critic for talkinbroadway.com and also is a columnist for Broadway Stars. Hi, Matthew.
Hey.
All right. Also with us, we have David Sheward. David is the executive editor and theater critic for Backstage, the newspaper and website for the performing artist. He's also the former president of the Drama Desk, the organization of New York theater critics, editors, and reporters, which presents its own awards on and off Broadway. He is the author of three books, including Rage and Glory, The Volatile Life, and the Career of George C. Scott. Hi, David. How are you?
Fine. How are you this evening?
Very good. Also with us is Adam Feldman, the theater and cabaret critic for Time Out New York, the magazine and publication and website. Hi, Adam. How are you doing?
Hey there. I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Great. And we also have with us Michael Riedel from the New York Post. Michael, how are you doing?
Fine. Nice to be with you.
Great. Also, Michael has a little television show with Susan Haskins I forgot to mention called Theater Talk, right?
Yes, that's right. That's
excellent.
Right. Soon to be getting higher ratings than the Tony Awards, which isn't too hard.
Well, you know, what will be the fate of the Tony Awards with plummeting ratings and disenfranchising their core group of people? What would this be like? Peter, why don't you start us off and tell us what you're thinking about? What happened with the Tony Awards?
I don't think it's going to make a damn bit of difference to the average viewer who turns in on that Sunday night that 100 fewer voters will be voting for the awards, or that the people who are voting probably were the people who had the least bit of agenda involved with the awards. The critics, in case anybody hasn't heard, and I bet you have, were not invited to participate in future Tony voting from this day forward. So that happened. And yeah, we're going to have to live with that. There's no question about that. A lot of people think it's going to be revoked next year, that what will happen is that the really important press, like Michael, will be able to vote again while the rest of us will be stay on the sidelines. We'll see if that comes to pass. But nevertheless, we have to remember that the viewer out there has no idea who's voting. He just wants to see who wins and loses. So as a result, I don't think it's going to have much effect at all.
Yeah,
I just want to say that I will stand in solidarity with Peter if he is not admitted back to the ranks of the
That's good of you, Michael. Adam, what
were
you
saying?
Well,
I think we should just give a little background for the benefit of listeners who may not be fully abreast of the entire situation. Basically, there were about 800 voters for the Tony Awards, and there are different blocks of voters within that group. So, you know, there's people from the American Theater Wing, there's people from Actors Equity, from the Dramatists Guild, from the Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers, basically all the different trade organizations. And until this year, also about 100 members from what's called the First Night Press, which is the sort of critics and journalists who were invited to see the show on opening night or before opening night. And the decision that just came down last week was to excise this group of 100 voters, the First Night Press, from the ranks of the Tony voter list. And so that's what we're talking about here. The question is, why did that happen, and what effect is it likely to have on the Tonys and on the coverage of the Tonys?
Actually, Adam, I just would like to interrupt and read the appropriate paragraph from the letter that just about all of us except James got on Tuesday night, I think. It says, in making this decision, the Tony Management Committee took into account that members of the First Night Press list will, of course, continue to have the opportunity to express their critical opinions in reviews and other coverage of the theater season. In addition, the management committee took into consideration the fact that certain publications and individual critics have historically pursued a policy of abstaining from voting on entertainment awards in general to avoid any possible conflicts of interest in fulfilling their primary responsibilities as journalists.
Well, look, Matthew, I mean, that conflict of interest rationale is transparently fake.
Adam, I could not agree with you more. I just wanted to get that word out there.
No, but I just, so, I want it. I just want to make it absolutely clear. I mean, there may be a million reasons for this decision, and Michael Riedel went into a number of them in his column this week, which is certainly worth reading. But conflict of interest is the least of them. I mean, it's Orwellian. It really is, that particular line of argument. When you're talking about an awards organization whose voters mostly comprise producers and other people directly involved in the shows that they're voting on, and then you target the group of voters least financially and personally related to the awards as the ones who have a conflict of interest, so-called. I mean, it's transparently absurd, and I'm surprised that they would have even bothered putting that on the press release.
Well, they're a fig leaf about publications that have exempted themselves from voting for awards in the past is a direct reference to the New York Times, which under Frank Rich, when he was the drama critic, Frank withdrew from the New York drama critic circle and also put pressure on the paper to withdraw from the ranks of the Tony voters. And at the time, there were a number of editors who were Tony voters. But that has nothing to do with a conflict of interest. That was just institutional arrogance on the part of the Times back in the day when it had pretty much complete sway over Broadway and frankly didn't want to be even associating with lesser publications. That's all that was about.
I need to interrupt for 1 second to just bring in a point for the listeners, is that I did invite members of the League and of the Wing to participate in this discussion this evening, and they declined to participate with us. And they had no comment on top of it. I asked them if they wanted to send a statement just to cover all our bases here, because I didn't want to
put a million statements out about their dopey little initiatives and their stupid little events all the time. But whenever they have to address something controversial, they hide under a rock.
I got one this week. Got one this week bragging about some, I don't remember, some Emmy nominations for the Tony telecast.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Come on.
I wrote in my column this week that I think two of the most useless organizations in the theater are the American Theater Wing and the Broadway League, the two organizations responsible for the Tony Awards. American Theater Wing has become a total joke. When Isabel Stevenson, who used to run it, was alive, she really fought hard for the integrity of the Tony Award and very often stood up to producers. But now, under the leadership of the totally ineffectual Howard Sherman, the Wing has allowed itself to be completely co-opted by the League and will do anything that the League, which is the organization that represents commercial producers, tells it to do, and it also will do anything that CBS tells it to do. So if you look at the telecast in the last couple of years, you see CBS putting pressure on it to have more and more production numbers from, you know, tired old touring shows like Mamma Mia, and completely excluding non-plays. So the Wing, which its whole purpose was to protect the integrity of the Tony Award, has completely abdicated that responsibility.
Well, I agree, and I think that this particular step in terms of the excision of the First Night Press will only make things worse. As has been discussed just all around town this week, this block of voters is the block that is most likely to vote purely on quality and not on personal or financial investment in the shows in question, like the road voters or the producers in question. So we have the one block that is likely to vote on quality has now been cut from the ranks of the voters. So I think we can only expect some kind of a diminishment of quality emphasis in the winners.
While I agree, Adam, I have to point out that critics weren't so Simon Pure either. I'll never forget in 2001 when Susan Stroman was walking down the street and met a critic who said later to me, she didn't even know who I was. I was astonished. I thought by now she knew who I was. Well, I came home that day, and wouldn't you know, my Tony ballot came in, and I voted for Lynn Taylor Corbett for Swing, because if Susan Stroman doesn't recognize me, she's not getting my vote.
Well, I don't.
I told you that story was off the record.
I think I know who that person might have been, but that's not, you know, of course there are people who will vote on ego. Everyone's a person, everyone has their own issues, but just sort of all things being equal, I think everyone would agree that this is the group that is least vested in the outcome of the awards.
I just wanted to point out that that most likely were the operative words in what you were saying. It's right. True. Yeah.
So Peter alluded this in the beginning that, you know, this is going to have very little effect to those who watch the Tony Awards or even those of us who know the Tony Awards. What does everybody feel? Is this going to change any outcomes? Would this have changed any outcomes in the past that you could have thought of?
I agree. I agree with Peter that for the you know 12 people who watch the Tonys, they don't care or know who the voters are. But I would think, if I were, let's say, Bernie Gersten and Andre Bishop at Lincoln Center, I would be a little concerned in that if you produce a play like the very fine revival of Joe Turner's Come and Gone, that doesn't move to Broadway under a commercial production, but is at the Lincoln Center Theater, which is a Tony Award theater, or is produced by Lincoln Center itself at a Broadway theater like, I believe, the Belasco, which is where Joe Turner's Come and Gone was. I think you are going to have a hard time getting voters to recognize your production. I think the press votes for things that it is moved by, that it deems to have some quality, whereas most of the other voters have a financial stake in the show. So I think you're going to see commercial productions continually triumph over nonprofit productions.
I think Michael is right on that, and I don't think it's just non-commercial productions. I think it's also smaller commercial productions. If you remember a few years ago when Avenue Q beat Wicked, there was a lot of talk about how the producers of Avenue Q had manipulated the road voters. And Michael, I think it was you, correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I think wrote a column afterward in which various road voters expressed their misgivings when Avenue Q turned out not to tour with them and said that they would have voted differently had they known.
They completely would have voted. They would have voted for Lincoln because that was going to have a tour.
Exactly. So the point is, you know, very candidly, a lot of these voters, many of whom don't see most of the shows at all, are voting their pocketbooks, and you know, explicitly so. I think that Avenue Q would have had a harder time, or a show like Avenue Q, a show like Next to Normal, smaller shows that have less, you know, obvious commercial prospects on a national basis will have a harder time going forward. And I don't know if, for example, I don't know what the votes were like this year. I don't know what the margins were like. But I wonder if the margins for Next to Normal winning Best Score, for example, over Elton John were small enough to be considered influenced by the First Night Press.
I agree. I think little shows like Next Normal will suffer. I think a very fine show that was off Broadway that's going to open this year, Bela, will now be in a very difficult position to beat a show, let's say, like The Addams Family, which is a very big commercial title, and if it's any good, will have a very big national tour. And there are going to be a lot more producers behind The Addams Family and a lot of road presenters who want a title like that in their theaters, and they want to be able to advertise that it comes to Broadway with a Tony Award. So those people are going to line up behind something like The Addams Family and not behind a Fela. And those 100 voters who were the press, they don't care if The Addams Family is going to tour the country or not. If they like Fela, they would vote for Fela.
Right. So I think it's, so it, what it represents, I think, is a loss or a step back in seriousness for the awards. And the average person voting and the average person watching may not care, just like the average person watching the Golden Globes doesn't know that it's, you know, voted on by a bunch of freaks from outer space. But I think that ultimately it will chip away at the legitimacy of the award in the long run, and the way that it's written about and the way that it's talked about, I really do.
Yes, so I would call on the press now, whenever they talk about the Tonys, they should refer to them as the discredited Tony Awards.
Well, that's, you know, but here's an interesting question, Michael, because for all this ridiculous talk about conflict of interest, what the Tonys have actually done now is create a conflict of interest where none there was. Because, you know, now we have just been rejected from the ranks of the Tony Awards. Now we are in sort of a conflict, in a news story conflict with the Tony Awards. So if we don't write about the Tony Awards, then we'll be accused of petulance. If we do write about the Tony Awards, we'll be accused of caving in cravenly. If we write negatively about them, we'll be accused of whining. You know, there's really no way around it. So, you know, the only way really would be to not write about them at all, which case we'll be accused of boycotting them.
Oh, but I hope we take a higher road than that. I mean, after all, our responsibility still is to report on theater and all that goes on with theater. So as a result, two wrongs don't make a right. And I really do hope that even though they may not deserve the best type of coverage, et cetera, that we take the higher road on this. And
I'm not for taking the higher road. I'm for a good fight all the time. It's fun to cover.
Well, in a way, I think that the highest road is to start looking at alternate ways of rewarding the theater in a more significant and artistically focused way. And, you know, Michael suggested this in his column is certainly something that I've been interested in for a while and even more so now, which is trying to get a critics award off the ground that would have a little bit more public
exposure and attention.
Exposure, yeah. And that means putting it on TV and maybe adding more categories if the membership is amenable, but at the very least putting it out there in a more aggressive way. You know, our membership, David is off of this line right now. It's unfortunate he can't add to this, but the membership of the Drama Critics Circle, I should mention I'm the president of the New York Drama Critics Circle right now, and it's you know, a venerable group, but a hard one to wrangle. I mean, you're talking about 19 people, all of whom are very opinionated and very difficult to get a consensus of. But I think that there is a real impetus now, and it'll be our 75th year next year. I think that this is the time to really get this off the ground and create a viable alternative to the Tony Awards.
Yes, I think the Tony Awards are a rather cheap and vulgar award and presentation now. And I don't think the drama critics should be too concerned about getting on TV right away or all that exposure. But I think it's good to expand some of the categories. And I think it's a very important point for the drama critics circle. And I really think they're the only award that can make it, because they're the only award that, to my mind, has any real prestige attached to it still. But should make the point that we honor artists. If you look at how the Tonys have gone in the last few years, increasingly they are about awards for producers. Every show has 8 million producers now. All those producers now have it written in their contract that they get to go up and collect their Tony Award on the stage of Radio City Music Hall if their show wins. It's more and more about producers. They have chosen in the past couple of years to dump the award for book writer from the telecast. They've gotten rid of all of the awards for costume design and lighting design and set design, you know, key artistic components to any production. It's increasingly clear to me that the Tonys are not interested in artists, but only interested in trying to get ratings and trying to sell tickets to the biggest commercial ventures. I think the drama critics have an opportunity to come forward and say, we're an award that honors the artists in the theater. And when you have your ceremony next year, Adam, you should ban producers from it and only invite the writers and the composers and the designers. I think you should think about having an award to recognize all the designers who have been completely now ignored by the Tony Awards.
So, Michael and Peter, I want you to jump in here. And Adam and Matthew, we haven't heard from recently. Do you think the end game, let's flash forward to what the Tony Awards will end up being, is it going to be an American Idol? I mean, if they're really going for if they're going for ratings and they're going for everything, wouldn't an American Idol format be the most logical business case scenario for them to do that?
It does bring up a good point, because American Idol, after all, is a TV show. And when the Tonys started in 1967 on TV, that was their first broadcast, it was fascinating, because in those days it used to get tremendously good ratings and always got rave reviews from all the TV critics. Everybody said, this is the standard, so on and so forth. It was very different then, because, of course, there was Ed Sullivan every Sunday night, who used to make Broadway in a very important part of his broadcast. And I wonder if one of the reasons why the Tony Awards has really become this glorified infomercial is because it's one shot at national exposure that it just doesn't happen very much anymore. It's the one way to get it into the national consciousness, even for 2 hours, 3 hours. So they did a rerun of Police Academy 6, I think. Or Porky 6, I never remember. One of
It'll
those
be a Broadway
movies.
Musical soon enough, don't you worry.
Right. And as a result, the rerun of Porky's or Police Academy, whichever it was, wiped the floor with the Tonys. I mean, so yeah, I imagine that much of the concern over there at the Wing and the League is, this is our one shot, and we just have to do the best we can with it to let people see what goes
but
on.
But it's silly. This is one reason that this decision is so stupid. It's because this award show is never going to be a populist entertainment. It's not going to beat the football or the Sopranos or even the Police Academy 6. That's not what the market is. It is aiming for, and this is what CBS has said for years, that it doesn't get as many people, but it gets a higher quality of person watching it. And that is because it has a reputation for seriousness and for highbrow entertainment, which it may not deserve, but it nonetheless possesses. And Broadway still has that too, and it benefits from
that. Not when you have
three
fat ladies singing Dancy Queen on it, it doesn't.
Look, I agree, but this is what I mean. So Tonys are not maximizing their own brand. They need to start taking themselves more seriously, not less seriously. But in the absence of that, we need to step in.
But the chain is as strong as the weakest link, and when you are given the shows that are being produced now, many of which go for the lowest common denominator, how much excellence can there be to begin with?
So where were we? Adam, you had mentioned
something. I just want to pick up on something that Peter said. I think he's absolutely right that the quality of Broadway shows on the whole, especially musicals, is really the lowest I've ever seen it. And in some ways, I think, Broadway is getting the award it deserves, and that is a diminished and a discredited Tony Award.
I really disagree with Michael on that one. I don't think that the quality of the musicals is as bad as it's ever been. If Michael, you were around in the 90s, the musical was terrible for 10 years. Straight through from about Falsettos to The Producers, you have maybe three or four decent shows in that entire period. We've had sort of almost a mini renaissance in the last decade or so with really good quality shows in addition to popular successes.
We were never dominated the way we were by the corporations before. We were never dominated this way by Disney.
Well, I don't know. Look at the Cameron McIntosh.
And all that sort of. Well, I would argue that the Cameron McIntosh and Andrew Lloyd Webber shows are infinitely more imaginative and better staged.
Really? The Miss Saigon and the Jekyll and Hyde and those kinds of shows?
No, Jekyll and Hyde.
I mean, that style of show, the big sort of serious, deadly serious, danceless, sung through crapola.
Well, I don't have an animus towards things like the Phantom of the Opera or Les Miserables.
I like them.
Effective shows in their way. It was the imitators that were terrible.
That's correct.
Frank Wildhorn, who imitated that, who couldn't do it.
But that's mostly what we had all through the 90s. And even the people who were capable of writing great American musicals, people like Stephen Sondheim and Candor Neb, were writing shows that bore the influence of those 80s deadly serious musicals. They were writing shows like Passion and Kiss of the Spider Woman.
I would disagree strongly with those people.
But, we had 10 years where there was almost nothing of artistic consequence in the American musical at all. And I think we're very lucky in the past few years to have shows like like Next to Normal, like Spring Awakening, like Carolina Change, like Avenue Q, like 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. I mean, shows that are smaller and of good quality and serious musically and interesting and ambitious. And I mean, these are shows that I think we can all be proud of and that have a place in American theater and on the Tony Awards.
Yes, and you have Legally Blonde, Little Mermaid, and...
Sure, lots of bad shows, but there have always been lots of bad shows, Michael.
It's David here and finally back on. I think that it's a matter of opinion as far as which is the most, which is the prevalence, bad shows or good shows. But I think the result of this recent decision is going to be, and you may have raised this point while I was offline, that you're going to see more shows like Legally Blonde and like lighter weight, more Jersey Boys, for example, winning Best Tony as a result of the critics not being in the voting block. And you're going to see more shows, and as a result, more shows like that are going to get produced, and you'll see fewer shows like Next to Normal and the show and Spring Awakening, and even Rent will have a tougher time getting produced on Broadway.
I think they'll still be produced on Broadway. I think they'll have a little tougher time beating the more commercial titles at Tony Award time.
Yeah, exactly. And the Tonys will become more and more seen as a commercial award dispensing marketing tool rather than award for whatever show is the best.
Well, I mean,
they've been traveling down this road for a long time.
Yes, indeed.
I thought it was appalling when years ago there was a brouhaha over leaving out two very commercial titles, Victor Victoria and Big, as nominees, and they replaced the nominating committee, and then they determined that you have to nominate four shows. The nominating committee has to nominate four shows. Even if there are only two shows of quality, you have to fill out that slate of four so they can get these big titles in there and then get them on television.
And that was when you had shows like Starmites getting nominated for Best Musical that were just pieces of crap, and it was just they needed four nominees, as you said, Michael, and quite often you would get like Wind in the Willows and like awful things.
Yeah, we've had a lot of terrible nominees, but again, you know, it's worth remembering that there have always been bad years, there have always been bad shows. We remember the best shows, and those are the ones that we revive, and we forget the dozens of other shows that opened and closed, you know, in weeks in those years because they were bad. You know, it's not
But Adam,
new.
Adam, you've got to know that all of the corporations and the movie studios are out there going through all of the cheesy movies of the 80s and 90s, and they're going to make them into musicals. I mean, there are that are coming your way.
I agree. But, Michael, the problem with that is not that they're inspired by movies. The problem is that they do a rotten job adapting them. You know, when they do a good job, as they did in, say, Hairspray, or in... You know, look, Sweet Charity is adapted from a movie. Little Nightmares
is adapted from a movie.
Nine is adapted from a movie. The problem is not movie adaptations. And in the olden days, a lot of the best musicals were adapted from successful and established plays. That was the medium of the day.
I have no trouble with the source material, but what is going on is that the material is not being adapted by really creative producers. It's being adapted by people who don't want to challenge the audience, but want to give them basically the
completely,
movie.
Completely agree. And
yeah,
I think that the big problem in the theater
that...
now, Matthew, I'll let you in 1 second. The big problem in the theater now is the absence of the serious creative producer across the board that is responsible for most of the problems we have.
Yeah, Adam, I do agree with that, but I was going to say in response to what Michael just said, the problem is that these musicals that are being made for movies are not being adapted. They're taking the movie, in some cases, enormous swaths of the screenplays, putting them on stage, sometimes even with the songs that were in the movie, and making either very few changes or changes that are just necessary to accommodate the very different limitations and technology of the stage compared to films. When you get something like Shrek, which... it has whole scenes that are lifted directly out of the film. I mean, there is obviously a dearth of creativity at work there because the producers who also produce the movies don't want to hurt the brand, and the movie is seen as the brand.
Let me interrupt you guys for a second because we seem to have migrated from the discussion about the Tony Awards into fixing Broadway.
Yeah.
I'll
say something about the Tonys and the voting situation. There was some concern earlier in this conversation that because the journalists will no longer be voting, shows like Next to Normal will have a tougher time of it, especially with the touring. I'm not sure about that for a couple of reasons. First off, I have a feeling that Next to Normal will tour because it's a small show. It may not have the staging. I'm talking about scenery, the staging, all those pipes and platforms, but it certainly will tour, and I guarantee you when it tours, it will announce itself as Tony winner because it won for Best Score and Best Orchestration. That's all it takes now. You win for Best Orchestration. Tony winner, you know, is plastered over the poster leading the consumer.
And they'll say it just like that. In that tone of voice.
The consumer is led to believe that it won the big prize rather than a minor prize. So I think it will tour with that on it. And the other thing, too, is the fact that Next to Normal will tour perhaps even quicker than Billy Elliot will, simply because it's smaller and more economical. Altar Boys, God knows, has been playing 2,000-seat theaters. It doesn't have a Tony pedigree, but what it does have is a small show.
It seems like there's a lot of confusing messages coming out of the League and the Wing versus...
Well, the League isn't saying the Tony Awards is not about the art, it's about the money. That's not what they're saying. That's just our interpretation of it. What they're saying is...
I think that the point that
they're trying to send... I also would add, in addition to whatever... Oh, look, there's a lot of different reasons. They say it costs them money. That's partly true, although it would cost them less than it does for almost any other group because most of us have already seen the shows in question. Yes, you go back to one or two... No, almost nobody goes back. I mean,
that's not true, Adam. That's demonstrably wrong.
Almost nobody
I know from talking to the producers and the press agents that
almost nobody I know. I know that
always goes back.
Well, then don't invite them back.
They might go back to a couple of them, but we're not talking about the way that the math is done is it multiplies as if everyone goes back to all of them. It's not true. I know personally, just speaking for myself, I went back to two shows.
It is true. They keep records of who goes back.
I went back to two shows.
We don't go at all in many cases.
I went back to three.
Right. I went back to two shows. People go back to three.
I went back to two or three. I generally go back to
Why not? Why not just have the producers say, okay, you can only go once. That's it. We can't afford to have you back. and then suffer the consequences if they, if earlier shows are, you know, if people are that absent-minded that they can't remember a show that was great in the earlier part of the season. Do they think the voters are that dumb?
Yes.
I dare say the three that I was invited back to had seats to spare.
Yeah, I don't. I don't buy that. I don't buy that explanation.
And I've only gone back when I've been invited. I have never called except for Billy Elliot when there were three nominees.
Right.
I have never gone back unless I was invited. I have never called to say, "Oh, I want to see this show again," unless the press agent sent me an invitation.
Me too.
There are great. If you take a look at the first night press list, there
maybe I'm in the minority.
Number
maybe you are, but I concur.
We don't cover the theater regularly as we all do. There are a lot of television producers from the big shows, and there was a feeling on the part of the producers that there were a number of people on that list who were only going to see the really big shows and pretty much ignoring everything else. And the original impetus for this was to cull that list and go through and maybe knock a few people off. But then there was an internal debate where they said, if we do that, then some people will say we're playing favorites with certain members of the press. So then they decided it was best to knock off everybody on the press list.
I wonder if this is going to backfire on them if they knock off all these TV producers who book for The View and Regis and Kelly and all of that and David Letterman and so forth. If these people are going to retaliate now and say,
these people aren't paying any attention to this dispute. I mean, they got
they don't care.
Fry than
and they're
going to
be invited anyway during the year.
They will,
If you're a press agent,
if you have a new show coming on, you're going to be on the phone trying to get the producer of the Today program in to see it so you can get a 2-minute segment of the kids dancing and singing from your show on the Today program. So those people.
Yeah, but again, Michael, though, I mean, that seems like a post facto explanation to me. I feel like if they had wanted to call the list, there would have been ways that they could do that. I mean, they don't have the entire memberships of Actors Equity or the Dramatists Guild either. There are ways of going about this. They could have talked with the press agents and gotten them to do a sort of a first-tier, first-night list, and that wouldn't have been too hard. I think that there's other factors involved here, whether they acknowledge them or not. I suspect that partly it involves a power grab on the part of the producers who dominate the Tony Awards Administration Committee, to secure more power for themselves in determining who wins these awards. And I also think, and, you know, Michael, you made fun of me a little bit in your column this week for saying this, but I do think that...
I make fun of everybody in my column.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I'm used to it. But what I mean is, I do think that on some level as part of a larger project to diminish the power and status of the press in regard to...
Yeah, but I think that's where you shouldn't be whining and complaining about that. We have
But the problem is, I think that's an actual point. I know that's very difficult to say it without it sounding like whining and complaining, but unfortunately, I still think it's worth saying because I think it's true.
Power. I actually think the press should be a little more ornery. I think on the whole, the theater press corps is a pretty docile lot, and aside from handing out bad reviews, most of the people are just very thrilled to have their free tickets and get a chance to interview some big celebrity. I mean, I, for example, think it's appalling that everyone waits around and is told by the producers when they can come to see the show. So you have shows that preview 4, 5, up to 6 weeks now, and they're charging full price tickets. I don't know why the critics don't say, you know what, two weeks is plenty for these shows. We're just going to go in and buy a ticket now. And by the way, people will laugh at this and say, well, the press can't afford to buy tickets. I don't think the press should be sitting in the best seats in the house anymore. Most of the people seeing the shows are going to be sitting up in the balcony. You should move around the theater
that's
and
a
see
separate,
how a show,
that's a
see how a show looks from a bad seat.
That's a perfectly legitimate point, Michael, and I'm perfectly willing to see a show from the balcony. I don't think it would affect my review that much. But there's also the point that if we, in these economically strictured times, yes, we cannot afford to pay $130 or $250 for two people to see a show. And I don't think it's right to, I think that, you know, to ask a critic to expense account it, that would then you would see the end of Broadway coverage. I'm sure the Post would not be willing to triple Elizabeth, who's the main critic on the Post, to triple her expense account, especially in these times.
I bought tickets for previews for many, many shows where I've been banned from the show where they don't want people in, and I have a reason to go take a look at it, and the Post has never nickel and dimed me on these.
Yeah, but you're one guy, Michael, and you have a special position. No, but also you have a unique position within the theater industry.
If one major critic decided not to play by the rules set down by the league, the other critics would have to find a way to follow suit, and you could cause.
We wouldn't. I'm telling you, Michael. We don't have it in our budget. I'm telling you that right now. Wouldn't happen.
But I mean, you know, then you are completely beholden to the producers because they're giving you free tickets to their shows.
Oh, in terms of when we can go?
Well, so are. Well, I guess
it comes along. Spider-Man will be previewing for 3 months before they let you in.
Right. Well, at a certain point,
the public theater previews for 5 weeks, and then they let you in for the last four performances.
I agree. The issue there, though, is not when they invite us. The issue is the price that they're charging during the preview period. And this is something that, you know, years ago, Frank Rich and Linda Weiner got involved in and lobbied them and guilted them into reducing, and this gradually crept back up. It is time for us to address that again. But I don't think that there's anything necessarily inherently wrong with longer preview periods. I mean, we used to have out-of-town tryouts for that purpose. It's too expensive now, so they do it here. I just think that correctly, those things should be lower priced. And very few companies, Disney is the exception here, actually, but very few companies have been offering discounts on their previews, and I think they should. I think you're right about that. But I don't think it's a question of the length of the previews or whether critics should go earlier. I think it's really just a question of trying to pressure them into lowering the prices during those previews.
Well, you're never going to do that unless you start buying tickets and go in.
Well, eventually, I mean, in a dramatic situation, if I'm not mistaken, the one that caused this, what was it, Nick and Nora, I think it was?
Uh-huh. Yeah, previewed for, like, I think that show previewed for, like I don't know how long, like 3 months or something?
Yeah.
No, and it has happened before.
So at a certain
point, there is a precedent.
Right. At a certain point, it cracks, and people, you know, and people did go and review it, and then people were angry. But, you know, generally, I don't think that there's anything particularly unfair about giving shows a few weeks to get on their feet. Some of them really need it.
By the way, in terms of complaining about the New York Shakespeare Festival at the Delacorte taking so long to allow critics to come and see it, that certainly isn't causing any problems for the consumer because, after all, tickets are free. So as a result, that doesn't really apply
well,
there.
Now, Peter,
consumer,
wait a minute. He's not talking just about the Delacorte.
Chunk of his or her time to stand in line, and is it worth it to stand in line all day?
And then if it's a show like Twelfth Night, which got universally praised, then the pressure, when the reviews come out so close into the run, then it's like ticket, the demand goes so way up that, you know, it's impossible to get in.
No, I was just going to say to Peter that it's not just the Delacorte.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, the public as a rule does, like Adam said, preview for 4 or 5 weeks, and then the reviews come out, and then they usually run 2 more weeks, and that's it. The park shows are usually the exception. They usually preview for about a week, invite the critics, and then they run for another month or whatever. But yeah, that's just the way the public does business, and Playwrights Horizons too, for that matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are really much. Those are theaters that are a little bit more dedicated to the artist process. You can argue whether that's a good or a bad thing, but that does seem to be what they're about.
So let me ask everybody here, what do you think is the – is this the end game that the Tony Awards Committee had, is to eliminate the journalists from voting, or is there a larger chess match in play here?
Well, I think that it's probably a combination of things. I think that it probably started, as Michael said, with trying to pare down, in interest of paring down the numbers of free tickets that had to be given out. And it probably started with, well, we got to eliminate some of these voters. 800 is just too many. And then they said then that we were the easiest target. So I think that the end game, that was the starting of it, to pare it down. But the end game is going to be like, you know, who cares? What are they going to do? And I think the result will be, you'll see, it will be perceived as a more commercial tool, if you will, and the result will be you'll see more shows like Wicked winning instead of Avenue Q, and more shows like Jersey Boys winning instead of Drowsy Chaperone, which happened anyway, but you'll see the more commercial shows winning at the Tonys, and I think it's going to be, the average person doesn't think about the Tonys at all, to be perfectly frank, and I'm sure we all realize that. But I think it will be seen as, oh, well, it's like the Golden Globes. It's whoever has the biggest show and the biggest stars and the biggest budget.
Right.
There are a few things at work. I just wanted to say that I agree with David that the press was very easy mark to eliminate from the ranks of the voters, because the majority of the other voters are producers who pay very high dues to the Broadway League to be Tony voters. So the league is in no way going to knock those people off because the league wants the dues that those people pay. And you see some shows
Didn't they trim the list a few years ago,
but they immediately backed away from that. Now that if you see productions have 18, 20, 25 producers, every single one of those producers pays a couple of $1,000, if not more, to join the league. And one of the reasons they do it is because then they get free tickets as Tony voters to all the shows.
And they eliminated people who hadn't produced a show in years, precisely.
But if you are very happy to cut the league a check to call yourself a producer, they will take that check and they will make you a Tony voter. I also think there's something a little more nefarious going on here, and I don't know how Machiavellian the producers are on this score, but I think they will be able to do some damage here with the decision to eliminate the press. I think the producers, ultimately the commercial producers, want to get the nonprofit theaters out of the Tony Awards. They've been very having to compete with a Roundabout and Lincoln Center for Tony Awards. And as I said earlier, by eliminating the press
and Manhattan Theater Club,
tend to go for the more quality shows, which might, on the whole, come from the nonprofit, you're going to diminish the ability of the nonprofits to really be a factor in Tony Awards in the long run. And I think this is part of an attack on some Machiavellian producers to begin to cut the nonprofits out of the Tony Awards.
Well, it's an interesting question.
I was just about to say that there's an historical precedent to that. When in the late 60s, they wanted to eliminate the APA Phoenix Repertory Company, which was the Ellis Rad company that did several very fine shows, and they said, don't nominate them. It's not for profit.
Adam,
it was a huge controversy.
It's much harder to do that now that so many of the bigger theaters, and Second Stage is about to move on to Broadway at the Helen Hayes, so that'll be another one joining the fray. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's true that the average viewer at home does not know or care, or that this will not diminish the seriousness of the awards necessarily for the viewer at home, but it will diminish the seriousness of the awards for members of the press, and that is who is going to be writing about these awards and covering them in the future. I know that, you know, and maybe it's for the best. Maybe we should think less of it. Maybe we should be less knee-jerk and lazy when we refer to so-and-so as a Tony winner or a Tony nominee as if it meant anything or as if we really cared. It may be time to stop doing that quite as much, and not as revenge, but just as an alert to ourselves, as a reminder that, in fact, these awards don't mean that much, and they never have, and they mean even less now. So why do we continue plumping them up as though they meant something?
Truth to tell, my newspaper, I have to say that my editor was always saying, I don't want to hear about such and such an award winner. Do not put in that this person won an award. Let's talk about everything else aside from that, because really, what are awards? And I thought she was terrific for saying that.
And some awards are more meaningful than others, and those are the ones maybe we should be focusing on. I think it's fine to say someone won the Nobel Prize or someone won the Pulitzer.
Yes, that's
a good one. No, but it is. And I think that there's something to be said for Michael's suggestion this week that we plump up. We were talking about this earlier. And Michael, when I say I want to get it on television, I'm not saying I want to make it like the Golden Globes or like the Tony Awards and have performances and try to make it into a big schmancy deal. This year at the ceremony, which I thought was lovely, at the
Algonquin. You need to get a better audio system, though, if you want.
Oh, I know. It was the Algonquin audio system was a disaster. But I thought that the ceremony itself was lovely. The guests were lovely. The presenters were lovely. And we took some of it on video. We put it up on the Time Out blog this year. And the response that I got was really positive on it. People were just delighted. I would love to do that. Just do the same award ceremony you've always done, just with slightly better production values, and put it on television. Give people a chance to see an award show that's really about the artist, that's really just a celebration of serious work, as chosen by the people who see the most theater in the year, and set that up as a viable alternative to the Tony Awards. And Dave,
good luck finding a sponsor is what I was going to say.
Well, it's not necessarily about finding a sponsor, because I'm not saying we need to do it on. I mean, we would need to find a small scale sponsor, but if we could talk to New York One or to CUNY TV or to Channel 13 about broadcasting it more or less as is, it wouldn't take that much extra work. And I think that you know, our organization, the New York Drama Critics Circle, as I was saying before, it can be hard to wrangle everyone into an agreement. But and there are traditionalists in the group, but I feel like some of those traditionalists are maybe hewing a little closely to the letter of the tradition instead of to the spirit. When the Drama Critics Circle Award was founded 74 years ago, it was founded in opposition to the Pulitzer Prize, which was the only serious drama prize at the time. You know, now, if we were going to found ourselves in opposition to the serious and most influential drama prize of the dimes, it would be the Tony Awards, not the Pulitzers. That's the award show that we should be defining ourselves against in terms
Listen,
of quality,
the Tony
in terms
Awards
of offering.
The Tony Awards are remaking themselves with this decision, with the decision to include high-profile shows that weren't nominated, with the decision to include more and more touring company shows, because people know that they're remaking themselves. And by the way, they have every right to do that. You know, we don't really have any control over the Tony
Awards.
Sure they do.
I think it's an opportunity for an award like the Drama Critics Circle to actually go back and look at what the Tonys were when they were a more elegant, a classier award. Where
I agree.
You have, when the playwright wins the award at the Drama Critics Circle, the playwright goes up and speaks. He is not accompanied by 15 producers who have it in their contract that they get to go up on stage so that they can be on CBS. And your award should be focused on the artists because they are fundamentally the most important people in the
film. Our award is focused on the artist, and I think that it deserves to be seen and, you know, and get out there to more people. When the award began, again, you know, people, our group is very publicity shy, but when the award began, that was not the case. The whole point of the award was to get our voice out there in alternative, you know, to the other voices that were being heard. And the entire broadcast, the entire show, the entire awards ceremony was broadcast live on the radio on NBC. So it's not like, you know, we were publicity shy little group mumbling our decisions into our mouths in the corner. The whole point of the organization has been and should be, again, to get our voices out there and to stand up for artistic quality in the New York theater scene. And my hope is that my colleagues will go along with me on this one.
Matthew, I was going to, I haven't heard you chime in yet about what you thought was the impetus behind this. Is this something that is an event within itself, or is there another shoe left to drop in the plan of the Tony Awards Committee?
Well, I think it's really hard to say. A lot of my feelings have already been articulated very well by other people here. But yeah, I think it's a step along the way. I think that it wouldn't really shock me that much if it's kind of the first salvo in a fight to stop giving tickets to critics at all on the part of the league. Well, you know, they don't vote for the Tonys. They're not really that important anymore because of the internet and this and that. I mean, it really seems nonsensical in some way that the producers wouldn't want to promote their show, but it really is, as Adam said in his wonderful Time Out piece that everyone should read, it really is a way of saying that the impact of the critics is not really very important to us. What matters are the people who have a financial stake in the shows. We're not really interested in objective opinions. So I think that it's really hard to say where it's going, but it has to be going somewhere. I don't think any of these things ever happen in isolation. So whatever will happen, I don't think is going to be good for anyone on the line, and I don't really think it'll be that good for the theater in general either.
So as a result, we have plenty of podcasts coming where we're going to be discussing some pretty tough issues, huh?
Is there any chance that there's going to be a wait-and-see attitude and they're going to...
Well, it's my understanding that, as Peter said earlier on, I think some producers will be agitating to bring some members of the press back onto the Tony voter ranks, but they will
Oh, really?
They will not bring everybody
That's
back.
Very interesting.
Well, I think that's the appropriate response. I'm very surprised, frankly, looking at the list of the people who made this decision. I'm not. There are certain people that don't surprise me at all for this decision, like Howard Sherman and Charlotte St. Martin. And then there are other people like Margot Lyon or Ted Chapin that really do surprise me. So it wouldn't I think it would be appropriate for them to revisit the enormity.
In David Rooney's piece in Variety, he pointed out that there are 100 names on that list who have been eliminated, and there are about 30 to 40 legitimate people, it's everyone on this line who's been kicked off the list that's speaking in the panel now, that are legitimately covering these shows, and that leaves about 70 or so names of people who are like television bookers, things like that, who don't need to see it on the opening night, who can come back on the second night. So that is interesting.
Ironically, three people on the first night press list are Charlotte Fing Martin, Howard Sherman, and Ted Chapin.
Mm-hmm. they disenfranchised themselves.
Privileges protected.
Again, it's going
to
be...
Somebody should put the question to Ted Chapin, you who run the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization, isn't it a conflict of interest for you as a Tony voter every time there's a Rodgers and Hammerstein revival on Broadway?
Right. South Pacific, you know. Did he vote for South Pacific, I wonder.
And Rodgers and Hammerstein handles more than just Rodgers and Hammerstein. You know, they administer the Andrew Lloyd Webber, Irving Berlin, and
the conflict of interest canard is just purely is nonsensical. I mean, you have producers literally voting for their own shows every year. So,
oh, sure.
You know, it's an absurd argument.
The producers have all this controversy swirling around them precisely because of their rationalization that we have a conflict of interest. Had they just come out and said, you know what, this is an award for people who work in the theater, and it's going to be voted on by people who work in the theater, who put the shows together, and we're going to take the press off, we wouldn't have very much to talk about. It's not our award after all.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and they could have used the Oscars and the Emmys and the Grammys do not have press voting for them, so they could just say, we want to be like these other awards.
Well, once they accused us of conflict of interest, then you really have to snicker and snigger at them and, you know, have a good time at their expense, which is what I'm happy to do.
I completely agree, but you know, it's not just that the argument was so stupid, it's that the fact that they offered such a stupid argument made it seem sneaky. It made it seem like there was some other reason that they were hiding.
Right, that there was an there was something they weren't saying.
Right. It was a really poorly imagined letter, I have to say.
I'm shocked.
Well, I can only speak from my end of things. I mean, I have kind of ignored the old rules on Broadway for a long, long time.
You're a rebel, and you'll never, ever be any good, Michael Riddle.
Exactly. The press should always be revolutionary. I mean, I go to out-of-town shows. I cover shows out of town. It's pretty clear. I don't really technically review them, but it's pretty clear if I'm going to promote a show out of town or be dumping on it. And as far as I'm concerned, these are big, gigantic commercial entities. They're charging lots and lots of money in town or out of town. They're not done for any artistic reasons. They're done to make lots of people lots of money, and they should be treated as such.
Yes and no. I mean, there is still a certain glamour that attaches to the Tonys, and I do like the idea of promoting theater for a national audience. I really do. I think, you know, I love theater. It's what I've devoted my life to. You know, I like the idea of it having a national platform, and I like to think that that national platform won't be humiliatingly debased.
You can strike a balance. You can
strike
a balance between being a commercial promotional thing and also honoring what is best artistically.
Exactly. And many of the Tonys in years past have struck something like that. The best Tony Award broadcasts have struck something like that balance. And in fact, I think that the Tony Awards broadcast historically are not at an all-time low right now. They've been bouncing back a little in the past few years. I mean, if you remember the early 80s, Michael, with the Rosie O'Donnell broadcasts where the shows were limited to 90-second clips from their shows. I mean, it was humiliating.
The Rosie O'Donnell broadcasts were very important at times because the Tonys then were really on their last legs. And she really did salvage them, so you have to hand it.
Oh, I'm not blaming Rosie, and I'm not saying that those weren't necessary decisions at the time.
But the point, though, is I think you're absolutely right. There has been in the past a balance struck between the commercial demands of the commercial theater and the demands that the Tony Award should still be seen as an award of some integrity and some class. But that was precisely because the Wing, which owns the copyright on the Tony Award, run by Isabel Stevenson, fought for the integrity of the award. I said at the beginning of the broadcast, and I'll say at the end, the Wing has now allowed itself to be completely co-opted by the producers and CBS and will do anything the producers and CBS tells it to do.
Take this book and learn to fly again, Broadway.
Well, that's, I have to agree with you. That's the way it looks.
Well, it's interesting because the league, you know, a few years ago started, you know, to create their own award ceremony.
That was because they were having so much trouble with the Wing, which was preventing them from doing all these things that they now do with ease.
Exactly. So now they have the Touring Broadway Awards. And I don't know anything about their Touring Broadway Awards, but do we know if the press is participating in voting on those things? Do we know?
I don't think so. I think those are voted on just by the producers. I think.
Hey, look, we have a tie.
Oh, no, isn't it a popularity contest? Doesn't the public vote on that? Or am I thinking something else?
That's something else that, you know, a bunch of the websites do a popularity contest.
But nobody's paying any attention to those things.
No. Exactly, you know, well, it's another point that we should bring up is, you know, is it that also that the First Night list has gotten out of control with so many, with the influence of so many websites out?
Now, wait a minute. I want to speak up there for a minute. The one thing that I found was confusing in some of the stories that have been reported are is the influence of the bloggers on the First Night list. Now, maybe Michael knows a little bit more about this than I do, but I write for Talkin' Broadway, as you all know, and I struggled for literally years making applications every 3 or 4 months to get on the press list until finally I was admitted after really a long time. And I don't want to say how long it was, but it would probably shock all of you who know how long I've been writing for Talkin' Broadway. And I don't think that there's necessarily a problem with all of the websites, because Talkin' Broadway really goes out of its way to follow the rules, to wait until opening night to post reviews and all of that. So it always kind of bothers me to hear Talkin' Broadway and other sites like it that are lumped in with the ones that maybe don't play by the rules quite
as
much.
Let me suggest a couple of things. First of all, I don't think that there are that many web journalists on the First Night list. There are a couple, but not very many, and certainly no more than would be just replacing the regular old-fashioned print journalists who have fallen by the wayside in the past few years.
All of you guys, you're a web journalist.
All of our
interviews are published on the web now.
I read all of my colleagues' writing online.
Absolutely,
know,
me too.
I have no problem with that. I think that one thing that might be influencing it in a more indirect way, and I allude to this a little bit in the blog that I wrote last week, is that for a long time the press sort of had to be coddled or tolerated by the powers that be producerially, just sort of as a necessary evil. And now that some of that power is being diffused to ordinary people online and the rest of it, and people are not reading the print publications as rigorously and not subscribing as vociferously, I think that for some producers, these press are no longer as necessary and evil and don't have to be cozied up to quite as aggressively as once was the case.
I think that's a bit of a fallacy. Some people have convinced themselves that the press is not that important, but I can tell you the smarter producers say the press may not be able to sell tickets the way, let's say, a Frank Rich could with a good review in the 80s, but where the press still has power, and where, frankly, I've enjoyed, you know, kind of playing around with what little power I have, is that we get the word out, not so much to ticket buyers, but we get the word out to other media people. So if I have a column about, let's say, a show like The Producers when it was trying out in Chicago, and I went out to see it and raved about it out there, that column, because it's in the New York Post, will be read by the bookers of the Today program and Good Morning America, and they will decide that, wow, there's something exciting happening here. Let's get on board. Let's book Matthew and Nathan on the show. Whereas if you say something early on, you know, 9 to 5 pretty much sucks out in Los Angeles, you'll have a much harder time as a press agent getting those media people who run the TV shows.
Don't get me wrong, Michael.
Too, under those circumstances, for one thing, Michael, I thought the correct expression was Nathan and Matthew, not Matthew and Nathan, but that's another story.
He's going alphabetically.
The ultimate thing here for me is that many ticket buyers are, after all, of a certain age, and they are still of the certain age where they're used to newspapers and they buy newspapers. They may complain that they're dinosaurs as they buy them, but they like having that paper in their hands. And given the fact that the age of the Broadway ticket buyer tends to be higher than that of any other consumer, I think that the print media still has to command some respect in what it can accomplish.
Well, look, Michael, don't get me wrong. I absolutely do think that we in the press still have some kind of power and sway. For sure we do. And I'm lucky to write for one of the few print publications that really does have an added value. And as a print publication, it's a lot easier to read. It's much, you know, more fun to consult that way. Yeah. So I don't I'm not disagreeing with you that we have power. I'm just saying incrementally going forward, year to year, I think we're going to find that that power, is, as it becomes more and more diffuse, I think we're going to see more and more gestures of this nature from producers trying to chip away at the power of institutional press to hurt their shows. And the only
proper response is, you know, if you can zing them when you can, zing them.
Oh,
but don't pay too much attention to it. They have every right to try to get around us. I mean, oftentimes we do write negative things, and that's perfectly fine. But we should just really sort of go on our own and not be so beholden to the establishment of Broadway, and that includes the Tony Awards, as I think we have been up until now.
Well, I agree.
I agree completely, and I think I do hope that we're able to get the New York Drama Critics Circle Awards a more prestige platform. And you know, it's interesting. I was president of the Drama Desk. Peter was president of the Drama Desk, and that is sort of seen as we're kind of similar to the Tonys in that we have all the categories. But lately we found it very, very difficult. I'm just a member now, but lately we found it very difficult to find sponsorship to get on television at all.
I think the problem for the Drama Desk is that it has tried to mimic the Tony Awards. Don't mimic the Tony Awards.
Yeah. No, I agree. David, we're going to be... I'm trying to get a group meeting together. I was hoping to do it next week. Looks like most of us are out of town, so it's probably going to have to be delayed. My proposal for any award show that we do is that we keep the awards that we have, maybe add a few, but not along the model of the Tony Awards or the Drama Desk. Come up with, you know, it's a chance for us to start from scratch and come up with awards that we think are relevant.
I really think the drama critics should consider some sort of a production award. I think it's appalling that the Tonys have marginalized completely costume designers, set designers, lighting designers, all these people, you know, just kick them into the pre-telecast thing, give them their award, get them on stage, get them off. These are serious artists whose contribution to the final product is integral.
I think that, Adam, a few years ago, you had a very good idea when you first became president of possibly giving an award for the best performance of the season, regardless of whether it's in a play or a musical or a man or a woman, just one performance, which is something that the Drama League does, but is a little bit strange because they nominate everybody that ever walked on a stage during the season and then invite them all to their luncheon. But that was a very good suggestion you had, and not everybody agreed with it, but we did agree to give a special performance award to Christine Ebersole in Great Gardens. And if anyone deserved it, it was certainly her.
Well, yeah,
may now have some traction.
I would love to see us think outside of the box on some of these questions. I would love to see us consider one for just Best Performance of the Year, or for Best Ensemble Cast of the Year,
or
Design.
Do something, a production design award where you give award to the writer, to the costume designer, to the lighting designer, the costume designer, the set designer, because you say, you know, this is a beautiful production that these people have put together.
Yeah,
the other thing that you should avoid is, I think it's absurd to have this whole horse race and competition and who's up and who's down and who's going to win. You shouldn't get into that. You should announce the winners
before you have your
ceremony, as you do now, and honor them without this, you know, bring people in there and then have a picture of somebody who lost so they look forward.
The absolute last thing I would ever want to do with these awards is have nominees.
Yeah.
It's the absolute last thing.
So I kind of feel as though that we've devolved into now fixing the Tony Awards after we fixed Broadway before.
No, we're ignoring the Tony Awards.
Yes, exactly.
You could have fooled me.
I just wanted to add my two cents into this before we kind of wrap up here. Is that I'm just a little bit disappointed that everybody is kind of looking backward and saying that we need to get a broadcast and we need to set up a television station and we need to get Cooney or New York One or you know whoever to do this when. Television on the whole is you know, going through their problems as well. I think that somebody needs to look very forward and say, okay, we need to have a long form broadcast, maybe on Hulu or YouTube or Facebook or something.
Well, there's no reason why you can't have them on both. I mean, I'm not at all opposed to not having it on the website and
I would say
you should have it on television. You should have it on the web. You should have it every available media that's out there. You should have it on.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that, as you know, once you involve television production, you get into lots of cost and union issues, and then it becomes all about the financial and commercial success of it. Whereas, if you're in an unencumbered area like the internet, that you might have an easier time of getting your award ceremony off the ground. Anyway, I think that we have beat this to death in such a respect that John McLaughlin would be proud of us, and our own little McLaughlin, the internet. So I just want to run down the list and tell me if you have anything to add in 30 seconds or less. David Sheward, anything left to add?
Just that I think this is a very good discussion, and it sounds like what we were just describing sounds a little bit like the Obie Awards, which I think are probably the most artistically pure of all the theater awards out there, and that may be something to emulate. The Obies don't have nominees. They just say, here are the winners. So that may be a model we may want to look at for the New York Drama Critics Circle Awards.
All right, Michael Riedel, any last words?
Well, I've sat through a few Obie Awards over the years, and please do not go down that route. They go on for about 5 hours, and they have the craziest lunatics up on the stage. So I wouldn't go down that way. I would say let the Tonys be what they want to be. As far as I'm concerned, they've been a devalued award for a long time. Ignore them and create your own awards, and think of what the theater is at its best, which is elegant and classy, and always put the artist at the center.
All right. Adam Feldman from Time Out New York. Woody, any last words?
Oh, I agree with what's been said to a large extent, and I do hope, as in the drama critics circle, as far as that goes, it is a bit like herding cats, herding wet cats. Everybody has very strong opinions, but I hope that I can get enough of us to go along with the prospect of setting up some kind of alternative system. I think this is a really good goose for us to take this seriously and set up the kind of award show that the New York theater scene deserves, a more elegant, more artist-centered award.
Matthew Murray.
Yeah, I think that this has been a discussion that has been well worth having. I think that the fact that people are talking about the Tony Awards and that it was able to get all of us together to discuss where the awards have been and where they're going and what else can be done about it, that almost makes up for being kicked off the Tony voter list, almost. And I would just like to say to Adam and David, I think it's wonderful that you're talking about revamping the New York Drama Critics Circle Awards, and I certainly hope that involves making some online reviewers a part of that process.
Peter.
Well, what's very interesting to me is both Matthew Murray and Michael Riedel have expressed sentiments that I have too, to myself, not in print, but that is the fact that it isn't such a big slap in the face, and we don't really mind so much that we ourselves are not voting for the Tony Awards. It's the larger picture that bothers us. I mean, I found it fun to say to people, I'm a Tony voter, and I won't be able to say that anymore. So that part of it is a small part of it. I do think that all of us here tonight really do take it more from the vantage point of what this is doing to the award than what's doing to us personally. I may be candid-like on that, but I truly believe that's true.
Alrighty. So on behalf of everybody on the panel, this is James Marino saying thank you for listening to This Week on Broadway Special Edition about our discussion about the Tony Awards. Thank you and good evening.